Flight attendants, please prepare for takeoff.
Stolen by Ehlers to Wheeler. Back to Ehlers. Scores!
Kyle Connor has the Midas touch right now.
And another outstanding stop by Connor Hellebuck.
Check the shoot. Score! Oh, what a slick move by Mark Scheifele.
Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets, hosted by Jets TV.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for downloading another episode of Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets. I am your host, Tyler Escovel, joined alongside by 680 CJOB's Jamie Thomas and Mitchell Clinton from Jets TV. Gentlemen, we enter a new week of Winnipeg Jets hockey, a four-game road trip for the Winnipeg Jets, two stops in Edmonton and then two stops in Vancouver. Mitchell, before we talk about the week ahead, just a little bit of reaction to what we saw last week from the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, of course, the main thing that's going to stick out in everybody's mind is the tough loss to the Ottawa Senators on Saturday. And I think what makes it stand out so much is the fact that, you know, that's obviously the third time over the course of the regular season where the Jets have kind of given up the game winner late. I mean, earlier in the week in Calgary, it was kind of something similar, except I thought Paul Maurice's answer when he was asked about it after the Ottawa game was interesting and a good point in that, contextually, there are three different things, right? Like, yes, it, you know, you can't back away from the fact that it happened, but he said it's kind of hard to find any sort of trend in that regard because, yeah, so the Ottawa game, you know, yeah, it's a tie game. You really want to get at least a point out of that. The Edmonton game earlier in the year was pretty much, you know, number one, Connor McDavid makes just an absolutely incredible play that there's not many people in the league that can do that. And then, you know, so you've lost a lead. So that's kind of a little bit different. And then the Calgary game was power play related. And as good as the Jets penalty kill has been, sometimes, you know, it's just a fact, you know, five on four, it's going to happen eventually as much as the Jets would try not to. So, yeah, those two things stand out. But also I've been, you know, working with the Jets since 2013 and outside of like injury happening, I can't recall them ever going 11-7 in back-to-back games. Like, so that was a little bit of a different look. I think it took them a little bit to get used to it in the first period against Ottawa on Thursday. And Ottawa obviously played a really good period to outshoot the Jets 18-6 in that regard. But it was interesting just to see, and the goal they did score against the Senators on Saturday, that was a direct result of what can sometimes happen. You had Mark Scheifele out there with Christian Vesalainen, a guy that's a first-round pick that can make some plays. And that's exactly what he did. Held off Eric Gudbranson and made a nice pass over that. Yeah, a little bit of luck. He was trying to go to Trevor Lewis, ended up on Scheifele's stick. Not a bad alternative. But yeah, so those are probably the two things that stood out. You obviously, you know, in a perfect world, you'd love to come out with three wins in the course of a week. What professional athlete wouldn't? But, you know, things to take away for sure and apply it to this road trip coming up.
Absolutely. And Mitch refers to the 11 forward, seven defensemen setup. Looking at our rundown, I was going to ask you, Jamie, about the 11 and seven, but since Mitchell mentioned it, I'm going to jump forward ahead here.
Yeah.
Just your thoughts on the way the 11 and seven shook out for the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously it doesn't look like that'll be the shakedown going forward in Edmonton, but just your thoughts on how it went.
Well, I think on Thursday, we kind of had the perfect setup or the perfect storm. We had Dylan DeMello in the intermission. We asked him about the seven defensemen setup, and he said it was tough getting used to the fact that you're just so used to having the six defensemen. So the setup didn't work out very well to start there. Then you kind of get used to it. Then we had Paul Stastny in the second intermission. He said, you're never going to complain about more ice time as a forward. So in that aspect, I kind of see where Paul Maurice is going. You want to roll four lines, but you don't want to get everybody delayed a little bit. You want everybody to be fresh and going and not sitting on the bench for too long. So you get a little bit of a rhythm going with 11 forwards. I do like how he said he won't do it on back-to-back nights. And I realize this is not going to be the process going forward, but it worked for the most part, in my opinion. And here's the other thing too. Those are trying to find holes in it. I don't know. The Winnipeg Jets didn't lose on Sunday because 11 and seven, right. They weren't in trouble in the first period on Thursday because they were adapting to 11 and seven. It's just Ottawa is not as bad as everyone is saying. The standings say what it is. Paul Maurice has been saying the whole time that I remember him specifically saying once their goaltending catch up with the rest of the team. You saw a great example of that on Saturday. Marcus Hogberg was very good. He wasn't brilliant, but he was as good as the rest of the Ottawa Senators were playing. That's why I think this division isn't as easy as everyone. It's not so cut and dry as everyone thinks it is. You're playing teams back to back. Chances are you're going to be splitting a lot of these mini series. That's just the way it is. They split it with Calgary, even though there was the overtime or the shootout loss and invested in there too. But it's so tight. But the 11-7 was something Paul Maurice felt was necessary to try. You got to give him credit for doing it. I didn't think it was as bad as everyone figured it, or some, I shouldn't say everybody, but some thought it was.
Yeah, and I think the 11-7 as well is, you know, possibly a little bit of a function of getting Tucker Pullman reacclimated right into the lineup.
Yeah.
And, you know, on Sunday, the Winnipeg Jets placed Logan Stanley on the taxi squad. So as we alluded to earlier, it looks like 12-6 will be the shakeup in Edmonton. Mitchell, special teams, you know, it's a broad question, obviously, but just what are you seeing on the power play and penalty kill from the Winnipeg Jets?
Special teams, go. Well, the penalty kill obviously has been something that, you know, you look back at the start of the year, the first three games, the Jets gave up at least a goal in each of those. But really, like, especially the last six games, it's been phenomenal. I mean, they
really has.
The only goal that's gone in is the one that ultimately, I guess you could say, cost them the game against the Flames earlier this week. But otherwise, it's just been, has there been chances? Of course, they're going to get generated. But I mean, anytime you're starting to penalty kill with Kopp and Lowry hopping over the boards, I mean, they're two of the best at it, I think. And they've just been able to, number one, pressure the puck in the right spots. They make zone entries difficult. And then when there's a puck battle along the wall, I mean, those are two guys that are going to win more than their fair share. And Derek Forbert also plays a big role in that in terms of killing plays kind of below the goal line. So that's a couple of big ones. And then they also were able to get a shorthanded goal from Mason Appleton, who, you know, read that bump back play that a lot of teams, including the Winnipeg Jets, like to do. And I've kept an eye on it over the last few games and just how Mason Appleton, when he comes out, he's usually the second part of the second duo that hops over the boards on the penalty kill. The amount of times that Mason Appleton just kind of sits in that forward or defenseman's back pocket and just kind of hangs there, like keeps up with them, you know, make sure he's a presence, but just he's almost sitting on that play. So they almost have to go, the opposition has to go to their second or third, you know, version of their entry, which, you know, obviously isn't their main plan. So the penalty kill has been fantastic. The power play has been, you know, slowly working their way up the standings. I think they're 13th or 14th in the NHL right now, heading into the game against Edmonton. And a lot of that, I think, is just reps. So we all remember, you know, when Patrick Laine got hurt, they had one practice before their second game of the season. And then really there hasn't been a whole lot of practice time that they've been able to devote to working power play since. So a lot of it, a lot of the reps has been in game. But I think Blake Wheeler's looking real comfortable in that bumper spot. Mark Scheifele, I mean, outside of getting absolutely robbed by Markstrom, could have a one or two goals from that one flank spot. And Kyle Connor is extremely dangerous from where he is, and Paul Stastny in the slot. I mean, and then you go to the other unit and Nikolai Ehlers is just sniping from everywhere. Seemingly everything he's touching this season is finding a way to either go in or set up somebody. So the power play is continuing to make some strides. I think they'd like to even get a little bit more out of it, but certainly with the amount of reps that they've been able to get in game action, you're starting to see these plays that they've probably got drawn up or figured in their head through video sessions really starting to develop with a little bit more frequency.
As we record on Sunday evening, yes, in fact, the Winnipeg Jets sit 13th on both power play and penalty kill. And one interesting fact, on home ice, the Winnipeg Jets, who have played most of their games on home ice, are actually sitting sixth on the power play. So, I mean, that should say something quite a bit, I would say. Shifting over to one last topic before we get to our interview, Pierre-Luc Dubois, obviously, he didn't play against the Ottawa Senators due to an injury. It doesn't appear to be long-term, although, you know, not an ideal situation for himself and the Winnipeg Jets as he tries to get himself comfortable with the team. Jamie, he did play two games this week. Obviously, you know, he didn't score or anything, but I think there were some positive steps in the right direction. What were your thoughts?
Well, I think immediately after the game in Calgary, he said, I could play better. But for the most part, I think it looked like he had sea legs to start in the first period. And that's to be expected because he was in quarantine. Hadn't had a lot of practice time. But, man, in the second period, you could just start seeing it to go together. He is great down low. He has a lot of power. Paul Maurice is pointing out the fact that he's a powerful man. He's only 22 years old. There's a lot to go with. And the way that he held on the puck, I remember him going through the neutral zone one time, held on the puck, held on to it, and then dished it off to Kyle Connor, who was cutting through the middle of the neutral zone. And that led to a big play. Then you saw him burst down the middle with an opportunity against the Flames as well. There's just so much there that in a short time frame, you can see what Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice are looking at and why they're so gung-ho about Pierre-Luc Dubois. It's just a shame, really, that he had to get hurt because I think he's just starting to get used to his teammates. I really like that duo of Kyle Connor and Pierre-Luc Dubois. I know Paul Maurice likes Andrew Kopp and Mark Scheifele together and Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton, but, man, if it's Kyle Connor and Pierre-Luc Dubois going forward, I don't think he can go anything wrong with that. But there's just so much to work with there, and he's going to get stronger. He's going to get bigger. Not in terms of height and stuff like that, but he's going to get a lot more muscular down the road here. And there's just so much to work with. And I can see why there's a smile on your face every time you see him go to work. And you see that. I like the fact that he plays with a mean streak on top of that. Just something more depth up the middle is just such an exciting part of what's to come for the Jets when Dubois comes back to the lineup.
Another player the coaching staff has spoke very highly about is Trevor Lewis, and he's our guest this week on the Ground Control podcast, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets. I sat down with Trevor following practice the other day earlier this week. We talked about a number of things, and I think one of the interesting ones is that he's one of five players from the state of Utah to ever play in the NHL. So we talk about the state of Utah, joining a new team, and much more. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Lauren Brossois, and you're listening to Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets.
Joined here on the Ground Control podcast by Jets forward Trevor Lewis. Trevor, first question I have for you is, I noticed walking through the parking lot, you have a California plate on your car. Does it have a block heater, and have you been able to start it in the morning?
That's actually Forward's car.
Oh, really?
I didn't bring my car. He parks in my spot sometimes. So, but no, we live close. So it definitely doesn't have block heater. It's... I think the thing he complains about the most is there's no heated steering wheel. He's like, why doesn't my car have? I was like, probably because he bought it in California. So, you got to start that thing about 45 minutes before you're about to leave.
How have you been handling the cold weather so far? I know you played all your hockey career in California.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice change. I mean, the kids are starting to get used to it a little bit. I mean, the first time I took them out to play in the snow, they lasted about 5 minutes. It took longer to get them ready than it did for they're out there. But they're liking it more and more. And, you know, it's been fun. It's different, but I'm enjoying it for sure.
I know you talked about when you first signed here that the next thing was to get the family up here. How has it been to have the family up? Are they enjoying it so far?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I was away from them for a while there, so... That was the longest I've been away in a long time, and it was tough, but you know, they got through the quarantine. Luckily my mom got in and came up and got to help my wife a little bit, so she didn't go too crazy while they're in quarantine. But yeah, it's been awesome just just coming home and seeing them every day, and kind of gets your mind off hockey a little bit too, so it's definitely been nice.
You have twins, so you're a pretty busy guy. I guess, what's that like? I know there's a lot of dads on the team. Do you guys hang out more often than not?
Yeah, it's you know, luckily it was our first kid, so we didn't know any different. No, but like Frenchie has twins too, so we kind of talk about it, and it sounds like our kids are pretty similar, boy girl, and kind of got similar personalities, so you know, it's definitely a lot, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
On the hockey side of things, obviously the Los Angeles Kings didn't make it to the bubble in Edmonton. You know, what was the off season like for you coming off of last year?
Yeah, it was long. In a lot of ways, I thought it was good for me. I thought my body healed, and I got some extra time to get treatment and, you know, train and get ready for the year. But it was definitely a lot longer than I was used to, and it was kind of dragging on. You know, you're used to playing hockey and not so much in the gym so much. So it got long, but you know, once there was a date set again, and kind of gets you excited to get things rolling, and I'm definitely happy to be a part of this team.
So what brought about the opportunity here in Winnipeg? Obviously, you signed a PTO and then parlayed that into a one-year deal. Just how did that come together? Obviously, it was a long offseason, like you said. I'm sure there were plenty of conversations.
Yeah. You know, I didn't really know how free agent was going to go this year. And obviously not the way I planned. You know, I was talking to a few teams along the way the whole time. And you know, with the financial situations this year, it was just kind of a different year. And I just wanted a chance to play on a good team. And you know, when the Jets called, it was getting close to camp time, and I knew with the quarantine and everything, I was probably gonna have to miss some days. And they offered a PTO, and I kind of looked at the team and thought it was a great opportunity for me. And you know, I kind of wanted to get something done right away just so I didn't have to miss too much of camp, especially since I'd been off for so long. You know, and I talked to Chevy and, you know, the coaches and stuff, and felt it was a good opportunity. So I jumped at it, and I'm happy I did.
You mentioned the quarantine. Then you come into camp. I think your first day of camp was a scrimmage,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah.
And you scored a goal. Could you have asked for a better start? I mean, obviously it's just a scrimmage, but, you know, it's a good way to get going.
Yeah, definitely. It was you know, I was a little nervous there because his first day on the ice was a scrimmage and everyone had been skating for a while, and I had been off for whatever the 7 days. And, you know, I felt good, you know. Luckily, I had some gym equipment in the house, and I could keep in shape that way, but you never know how it's going to go. And I just wanted to come out and prove that I could help the team win. And, you know, I thought I did a good job of that.
We're about a dozen games or so into the season now. How do you feel the team is clicking at this point?
You know, it's awesome. It's a great group of guys. I mean, right from day one coming in, I felt very welcomed, and you know, anything I needed, and someone was there to help me out with anything. And I think since the season's been going, everything's been good. I think we're playing well and playing as a team. You know, got great leadership and got a lot of good pieces here to go a long way.
You've spent a long time in Los Angeles, and then coming to a new team, I mean, that's got to be difficult. I mean, you won two cups with LA. Just how hard was it to say goodbye to LA and just experience this new environment that you're in?
Yeah, it was definitely different. It's off season when I had my meeting with Rob Blake. He was honest with me and let me know what direction the team was going to go in, and I appreciated that, and so let it drag on. You know, I grew up there basically. I mean, I got married, had kids there, and played there for a long time. So it was definitely different, but you know, I was excited for a change a little bit, and you know, I couldn't have picked a better place for sure.
You get that change, but a few things remain the same. Obviously, you played with Derek Forbert. You probably knew Nate Thompson for a little while. He had a cup of coffee in Los Angeles. Just what was it like to come in here and just see some familiar faces?
Oh, it was great. You know, Derek ended up staying with Nate for my quarantine, and I stayed in Forby's house. So that was awesome, just so I didn't have to be in a hotel. And, you know, it's always nice to know a few faces when you come around new place. Just they had been here for a month or so they kind of knew their way around, so if I had questions, I'd just ask them. And yeah, it's been, I mean, even Jamie Compan was in LA and Dave Lowry too, so just having those familiar faces if I had questions and stuff, it was nice.
Did you know anyone else outside of those guys, or are there all new faces?
Pretty much, yeah, all new faces. You know, I'd played like junior against Wheels a little bit and stuff, but, you know, never, I mean, we've said hi to each other, but never really met and stuff. So, yeah, everyone else was pretty new to me.
Happy to be on the same side as Wheels now?
Absolutely, yeah. Playing against him my whole career, it was tough for sure.
You know, GMs and coaches talk all the time about bringing guys who have a winning pedigree. You're a two-time Stanley Cup champion. You are that guy here in Winnipeg. Just what is that role like? And is it too early in the season maybe to put that to the test or use those experiences to your benefit, I guess?
No, I never think it's too early. I think you always kind of fall back on those experiences and, you know what it's like to get there and win. But there's a lot of guys in this room that played a lot of playoff games and played a lot of championship games, whether it's whatever Olympics or, you know, whatever. So Yeah, I'm happy to help when I can, but the leadership here is really good, and Wheels and Shife and Mo. So, you know, I just come to the table with the work boots on and get going every day.
Okay, so you're from Utah. Obviously, it's a hockey hotbed. Tons of hockey players that have played in the NHL played in Utah. Yeah, are from Utah. Sure. All five of them. You being one of them.
Yeah.
First question: can you name the other four?
That I've played in the NHL?
Yeah.
Daniel Brickley, Steve Konowalczuk.
Yep.
Dylan Olsen.
Yep.
And I don't know the other one.
Goaltender. Played for like four different teams.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was from Denver.
Well, he might be. The internet does lie sometimes. So Richard Bachman?
Bachman, yeah. I mean, I've played against him when he was in Colorado. I didn't know he was from Utah, but
yeah maybe. No, that's what the internet says.
Maybe so. He was born there or something, yeah.
So Utah, how do you get started playing hockey in Utah? Obviously, I know it's a big golf basketball hub.
Yeah, my dad's family's from Lethbridge, Alberta.
Okay.
And his family moved down when he was in high school. So he'd grown up around hockey and... you know, right from when I was young, he got me a pair of skates. We lived right across the street from an ice rink. When I was 2 years old, he'd take me over every day after work, and we'd go skate. And you know, I just kind of fell in love with it that way.
Is the hockey market big in Utah for youth hockey? Or I know you obviously went to Des Moines to play junior. What was that like, kind of?
It was when I was growing up, there wasn't much hockey at all. I obviously moved away when I was 15. I went with couple of my best friends over to Colorado to play midget hockey, and but I know ever since the Olympics happened in Salt Lake, it seems like there was more rinks built, and now when I go back, there's a lot more hockey and a lot better players and a lot better competition. I feel like there's guys in college and minors and mid and juniors too, so it's definitely grown a lot. And you know, I would like to go back and help grow the game a little more there.
You lead me into my next question. You mentioned the Olympics. You were about 15 at the time. Did you attend any of those games at all?
I did, yeah. Any games my dad could get tickets to, we went to. So
really?
I think we went to like four or five games.
Hockey, yeah. Specifically?
Yeah, hockey, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's all we went to. But yeah, it was, you know, it was, I think that was the time. When I was watching that, I was like, that's what I want to try to do is play hockey. And it's kind of funny looking back and thinking about that now, but yeah, it was special. It was awesome to watch.
You know, it's just as a hockey fan, no matter, you know, which country's colors you bleed, you know, both of those teams, Canada and the US, those rosters were stacked. That must have been really cool to go and see.
Yeah,
those games.
Yeah, it was awesome. I think we saw one Canada game, one US game, and then saw Jágr play with Czech, and yeah, it was cool.
You mentioned just you want to grow the game in Utah after your career is over. Just what do you think that looks like? And obviously not putting a date on the end of your career, but just what do you hope to accomplish in hockey, following
just,
hockey?
You know, just bring some more knowledge back to Utah. I think there's a lot of teams, but you know, I think just like helping with the young kids and helping train and, you know, think the game a little bit and just kind of getting out there that way.
Awesome. Trevor, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Shop where the players shop. Jets Gear and TrueNorthShop.com are your authentic team stores. Make sure to stock up on all your favorite Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose merchandise today. Visit one of the five Jets Gear locations or shop online at TrueNorthShop.com.
Thank you so much to Trevor for taking the time to do that interview. Learned lots as always. All right, looking ahead, the Winnipeg Jets have two games against the Edmonton Oilers to start the week on Monday and Wednesday, and then followed up with a Friday-Sunday battle against the Vancouver Canucks. Edmonton is 7-3 in their last 10. Vancouver just got off the schneid. They picked up a win over Calgary on Saturday night. They sit 4-6 in their last 10 and a couple of points, 3 points back as we record of the Winnipeg Jets. Mitchell, your thoughts on what we might see this week?
Well, I thought Paul Maurice had a really good full-out answer today, today being Sunday when we record this, just about, you know, the style of play that Edmonton likes to play and how players like Nikolaj Ehlers love that and whatnot. And he was careful not to be like, yeah, the Jets are happy to play Edmonton and you know, bulletin board material, blah, 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 blah. But I think anytime that these two teams play against each other, there's so much skill and so much speed that it's just entertaining hockey flat out. So I look forward to that. I also look forward to the fact that, you know, Tucker Poolman's back in the lineup, and knock on wood, he seems to be a guy that not that Connor McDavid has fits with or anything, but he's just a guy that has seemed to play Connor McDavid pretty well. And honestly, over the course of the couple of games that Poolman has played since he's come back, I mean, the guy looks like he hasn't missed a beat. Like, he just, like, I think it was his second shift. He jumped right back up in the play, had a pinch at the blue line. Like, it looked like he'd been playing every single game. That was just something that stood out to me in his two games back. But Jets have had some success in Edmonton as well, so that's something for them to lean on. And then when it comes to Vancouver, obviously, the Canucks beat the Jets earlier this year in what might have been one of Vancouver's best performances, because after that game, you know, that's when the slide kind of started for them. And then, yeah, Tyler, you mentioned the win that they had just over the weekend was their first W in February. It's been a tough go for them of late, but they really kind of took it to Calgary over the course of that 60-minute game there. And like the shots on goal, like we talked about the 18-6 that Ottawa put up. It was something, I believe Vancouver had over 20 shots on goal in the first period. And like, they kept it up. It's not like they had 60 shots on goal, but they were over 40 against Calgary. And as the Winnipeg Jets know, playing the Flames, it's tough to generate offense against the Flames. We talked about style of play. Edmonton and Calgary are very different, and this was part of Paul Maurice's answer in that, you know, there's no easy ice. It's tough to generate anything against the Flames. So that's why, you know, the fact that Vancouver was able to put up the amount of shots that they did really shows the level of play that they were at. So it'll be interesting to see where the Canucks are at by the time the Jets play them. But overall, a tough road trip. There's no easy games, as we said, in the North Division, and it starts against the Oilers.
One player that everybody will be watching out for is Paul Stastny. He's got 8 points in his first 14 games with the Winnipeg Jets this season. Jamie, what have you thought of his play? Obviously, you know, he's been very versatile. He's been shifting to the wing. He's shown some chemistry with pretty much anyone he's played with. How valuable has he been for the team?
Oh, beyond value. And I think it stretches beyond what's on the ice. I think guys really appreciate Paul Stastny in the dressing room. Clearly, there's a comfort there because of his short time here with the Jets in 2018. And then, of course, Blake Wheeler and him are very tight in terms of a friendship, too. So there's that leadership aspect. There's that guy that you can lean on. He's always teaching on the ice. You see him consistently talking to the younger players during practice. I love that part of it. And I love the fact that he looked comfortable playing on the wing with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton on Thursday. And he said, all three of us guys can play low if we have to. So you can just be more aggressive with those two guys is kind of direct hockey. And that's what I've liked about this team, guys moving out of their normal positions. You saw Adam Lowry play a little bit of wing, but I think Paul Stastny brings a lot more than just points. I know he's making $6 million plus, and you want to see those point values. But there's way more to Paul Stastny than just putting points up. It's just he can do anything. Now he's centering the second line right now. If, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois doesn't go on Monday, which it looks like that's going to be the case. But you can go wherever you want with Paul Stastny up and down the lineup. And that says a lot about a veteran player like that, where he just wants to win. And clearly that's why the Jets brought him here.
To close things out, Trevor Lewis and I talked about the state of Utah. I will give you some trivia here. I doubt you will get the answer right, but can you name at least one other player in the National Hockey League that is from Utah?
Like current?
Non-current. No, non-current.
Oh, okay.
He's the only current one in the NHL at the moment.
He's a lone wolf.
Yes.
You got me.
The funny thing is, we're doing this over Zoom, so like you could totally see if one of us was like, "I'm."
Yeah. Suddenly the video stops. You can't. Jamie's when it's dark on Jamie's screen right now.
No, I have no idea.
Jamie, you got nothing?
I got nothing.
All right. Well, you're gonna have to listen to the interview anyway. Oh. Thanks for listening to Ground Control. Goodbye.
This has been Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets, hosted by Jets TV. For Jets news, videos, and more, head to WinnipegJets.com.